This week on The Inswinger.
One FA Cup is all he has to show for. Yes, they got back into the Champions League. Yes, they got close as they have been for years to winning a Premier League title, but all for what?
So who's the problem? They act like they need to spend a boatload of money on a new team. You already have.
He's setting a blistering pace, and it was a clever finish at the weekend, and they're a really fun team to watch.
I think Salah's hit a new level. I think he's playing at a Ballon d'Or level, to be honest with you. I think they've got one hand on the trophy.
Welcome back to the Inswinger Podcast, Season 4, Episode 12. I'm Charlie DiMatteo, joined alongside
Harrison McGlashan.
Not quite alongside each other today. We're home from Boston, both in Connecticut. Pretty far away in Connecticut, though, gotta say. Opposite ends of the state. But we had to come back with you to recap some of these festive fixtures, which we are right in the thick of in the Premier League. We got title contenders, top four contenders. Nobody would have thought at the beginning of the season to get into. So we're going to make our way down the table, give our thoughts and takes on the last couple weeks of footy. But Harrison, let's start at the top of the table with your arch rivals. You got that Everton flag behind you. The boys across Merseyside, Liverpool, I mean, they're clear and away the team to beat this year in the Premier League. I mean, they dismantled my West Ham team yesterday 5-0. I don't think anyone was surprised at that. Is any of it surprising to you? Because we've touched on how well they were set up post-Klopp, but it's seemingly, they seem unflappable at the moment.
I would not have had them this far in front. I wouldn't even have had them in front at the beginning of the season. Very impressive stuff from Slot. But from the players, man, I think Salah's hit a new level. I think he's playing at a Ballon d'Or level, to be honest with you. I think they've got one hand on the trophy right now. I think they're running away with it. They look by far the strongest team in the league, as you said. I know it's far from over, but with Chelsea dropping points, Arsenal losing Saka, it feels like it's been a significant holiday period for the title race. And Liverpool have cruised past Leicester and West Ham. They're 9 points clear of Arsenal at the time of recording. They don't seem to be slowing down. And they're just from front to back so solid. I think the solution Slot has come up with. We've talked about, you know, the midfield and Gravenberch. And I have to shout out Curtis Jones. I think he's hit a new level this season. I think the back line has been sneaky good. Obviously, we expect that from Van Dijk, but I think Robertson's role, he's sort of tweaked that, and he's been solid defensively, and Trent, of course, does what he does, Konate. So he's made these little adjustments that have just taken them to a new level, and yeah, it's been a bit of a perfect storm because, you know, City aren't themselves, and Chelsea are so new to this scene, and Arsenal, we'll get on to them, have not quite been themselves this season. So there are other factors at play here, but looking what Liverpool have done themselves, I mean, they've been near perfect. I think this team looks like they're going to score at least 2 goals every game. I mean, they're sensational in attack. Diaz up front, another adjustment he's made that's worked because Nunez isn't really done the business in a Liverpool shirt, I think, if we're being honest. So I'm struggling to see a world in which they don't win it this year, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and you brought up Mo Salah, and I want to talk about Mo Salah, and I think he's playing at such a high level. He's solidifying himself as an all-time Premier League great, and I don't think, you know, you would have been crazy to say that before the season. He was, you know, a top 10 Premier League player of all time, but he's getting to that level, and now Liverpool have another dilemma on their hands, which they had kind of a couple of years ago with his contract running down, and he's playing so well. But you kind of have to wonder, can he keep it? How much longer can he keep it up? And is it a sound investment to renew his contract for a couple more years? And it's a difficult conversation. It's ironic that it's Liverpool because the Red Sox had this issue with players, and it's the same owners there with Liverpool. And will they give Salah the contract he deserves at age 32 after the season? I don't know, but what I do know is he's been unbelievable, and he is the reason they are clear and away the best team, I think. He's the biggest reason. And, I mean, what a time for Mo Salah to do it because, you know, City are dropping away. You know, like you said, Arsenal are not the team they once were. If anything, I think it was a moment this past offseason, Salah easily could have been like, you know what, Klopp's gone, my time at Liverpool is gone, I want a new challenge. I mean, we constantly heard of those Saudi rumors heavily linked with him, and instead he's just upped his game to a ridiculously high level. And just briefly, I mean, their position in the Champions League also, I mean, they're top of that, I guess, what do you call it, table, I guess, the league phase. There's really no sign of slowing down for Liverpool. I think the only thing that stops them, you said one hand on the trophy, I would agree with that. The only thing that stops them is if they get an injury to a Van Dijk or Salah. I think those are kind of the only two names. You take either of those out of the equation and it becomes an interesting conversation. It becomes very difficult for Slot to keep up those standards. But again, I mean, we're nitpicking here. That's what we're saying realistically can derail them. And then just getting into, I mean, we'll get to Arsenal later on, but just briefly, like, you see what an injury to Saka has done for their title chargers has already been dwindling a little bit in recent weeks. So if Liverpool were to get something like that, you wonder, but they're in such a strong position because, and let's get into these other teams, the other teams around them are not the usual suspects. You have Nottingham Forest, who, let's get into them. They went away to Goodison Park and comfortably dealt with you guys 1-2-0. Chris Wood scored another lovely goal. They just look like they're playing as such a unit, which you have to when they don't have, you know, outstanding quality. Nuno is getting the absolute best out of these players. But, I mean, let's talk about what you realistically see, because I remember a few weeks ago we talked about Forest and what their end of the season could look like, and we were kind of like, yeah, look at these teams they're beating. I mean, it's halfway through the season. They are in second. They are playing so strong. Are they a realistic team for top four? I mean, is there anything above that? If Liverpool slip up, are they there to capitalize? I mean, that's what we're talking about, though.
It's an unbelievable turnaround, and I have to admit, I did not think that this way of playing gets you this far up the league, but Nuno has proved everyone wrong. They don't need the majority of the ball to win, which is outstanding. I mean, they're as clinical as just about anyone in attack right now, and that can get you really far. Chris Wood, you know, the whole attack really looks so confident. I mean, they're really pacey up there with Elanga, Hudson-Odoi, Gibbs-White, Sosa, who played yesterday. Whoever plays in that front three behind Chris Wood, really pacey, really effective. The style they use, it's counterattacking football. It's effective. It can work against any opposition because of the quality they have in the attacking third, I think. And Wood doesn't need many chances. He really doesn't. He doesn't. You give him one or two, he'll put one away. And at the back, they look really solid, even without Murillo on Sunday. Morato stepped in. I mean, I don't know where they find these guys, but the investments they've made into signing players, it's finally starting to pay off because they look really dangerous and they look really solid at the back. So they only need, you know, a couple of spurts of momentum in 90 minutes to win games because they've been that good on the counter and that clinical. So teams, including Everton on Sunday, continuing to fall into Nuno's trap. They're really tough to beat. They don't need the ball. They're just effective and clinical, and they've got just, I mean, you look at the starting 11 every week, it's solid from front to back. I mean, like I said, those investments they made a couple years ago look like they're finally starting to pay off. So fair play. Fair play to Forest. They've been, it's frustrating because they let you in, right? They give you the ball. Everton had some of the ball. Everton are a team that doesn't know what to do with it, you know, but it played right into Forest's hands. So you got to say fair play to Nuno. He's got a game plan every week, and it looks really effective.
Yeah, and this Forest team, I mean, I remember the United team under Ollie when they were at their best, and it was a counterattacking style, and I think that's what this Forest team reminds me of the most, and like all the things you just touched on in their style. I think there is a limit to how far that can get you, but I think the only limit is winning the title. Like, there's no reason they can't finish top four. I mean, you look at the teams they can beat and are capable of beating and the parity in the league. There's no reason they can't replicate what they did the first half of the season in the second half, and that would leave them in the top four. However, I've seen similar teams. Like, I remember, you know, prime West Ham under David Moyes is a lot like this Nottingham Forest team. They were clever on the counter, knew how to score when they had to. However, if other teams start adapting, that's when it becomes a problem. And when the pressure is on Forest to go and take control of the game, I think that's when they might get found out. That being said, what they've done is sustainable to a certain extent. Like, they might not even have to replicate this half of the year to finish top four. You don't know you know, what the other teams are going to do. That being said, I think, you know, Arsenal, Chelsea, even City, I think, to an extent, are probably well set up to make a charge just because of the depth of their squads. Maybe Chelsea more so than Arsenal and City. But it's been unbelievable to see what Forest have done. And I think Nuno deserves a lot of credit because I think both neither of us were really that optimistic about Nuno and have been, you know, when he was Spurs manager towards the end of his time at Wolves. It was kind of I'm forgetting the Forest owner's name, the Greek guy.
Marinakis.
Yeah. Marinakis. It was a very Marinakis appointment to go get Nuno after sacking Cooper. But it's paid off, and you have to say the signings, which, again, we questioned at points two, are paying off. Chris Wood is one guy I just want to talk about briefly. Like, Chris Wood at Newcastle, that was a joke of a signing. They paid that was right when the Saudis came in. They paid £25 million for him and took him away from Burnley, and it was like, this is what was going to keep Newcastle in the league. And he was god-awful for Newcastle, and here he is. We knew he could score, like, double-digit goals, like, for a year. He was like a 10-goal, 12-goal a season guy at Burnley, which was impressive because, again, he wasn't having loads of chances. He was that scrappy guy who epitomized, you know, Dyche-ball. But I think he's got 13 goals this half of the season. He's setting a blistering pace, and it was a clever finish at the weekend, and they're a really fun team to watch, especially with, you know, the atmosphere at the City Ground. They've got a great fan base. So definitely a feel-good story in the Premier League for Forest. However, let's move down to third and fourth. We'll get into Arsenal and Chelsea. Let's start with Arsenal. Bukayo Saka obviously went down a couple weeks ago. It looks like he needed surgery. Going to be out for a while. I mean, how detrimental is that to Arsenal? Is there a world where they can survive for, you know, 6 to 8 weeks without Bukayo Saka and still hang around to win the title come, you know, March and April? Or could this be a nail in the coffin to their title charge?
I mean, listen, I think they've got a mountain to climb, especially without him. I mean, with or without him, I think 9 points is pretty steep, you know, entering the new year, especially the way Liverpool are playing. I mean, they don't look like they're dropping points anytime soon, right? That's the concern. So I think Saka has been their best player this season. So yeah, I think we might be sitting here in 2 months' time saying that was the nail in the coffin. I think they can hang around, but, you know, can they have the deficit without him? I'm not sure, and that's kind of what you need to do. So, I mean, listen, their last two results have been good, especially putting 5 past Palace. I thought that could have been a big moment for them to show the rest of the league that they're back to their attacking best. Saka goes down. They dominate Ipswich. They only win 1-0, and I'm thinking the same things I thought earlier in the season. They're not as good as they need to be in attack if they want to catch Liverpool. We need to see more from them going forward. So is Jesus hitting some form against Palace a reason for hope that he can be the guy? Maybe. I'm not sure they can rely on him to consistently get goals. I just think that 2 months without Saka is a lot of attacking production that they're going to miss. So if he was fit, I'd say it's possible, but unlikely that they're going to win the title. Now it looks like a monumental task, and the January window will be very interesting for them. But we know it's tough to find a reasonable deal in January. They've needed another attacker, in my opinion, for a while. Whether it's an elite left winger, a backup for Saka on the right, maybe a number 9, I don't know. But they need something. And I think, honestly, I think they've got to go and win a cup this season because this team is pretty due a trophy. I don't see them making up a 9-point gap without their best player. I think that's a huge task. If they can hang around and maybe it's still 9 points in 2 months and you're saying, I don't know when they play Liverpool, but can you beat them? You hope Chelsea beat them. Maybe you hope Everton do a miracle for their game in hand. I don't know. Maybe you're back in it all of a sudden. But Liverpool they score so many goals, man. And with Salah's been the best player in the league, Van Dijk's been the best defender in the league. It's hard to see that team slowing down. I mean, Arsenal, they've got to be disappointed, man, because with City out of the race, and I think they are out of the race, they've been poor. This was their chance, and Liverpool, as well as they're playing, Arsenal can play that well. Arsenal, I thought, were better than Liverpool when they played them, but they didn't get the win. And I think that was a missed opportunity. The City game where they were down to 10 men, just seconds away. That was a missed opportunity. So I'm not expecting them to play scintillating football every week. They can do the ugly side of the game, but I'm still left wanting more from them. And I think that will cost them. I think, you know, results up until now, results going forward without their best player, it doesn't look good for them. I'm struggling to see a world in which they do it.
Yeah, you kind of led into where I was going to go in terms of the disappointment of, like, City are not what they were the past couple years, and this year they weren't able to take that opportunity. And it brought up a point to me, and I've been seeing some talk online, you know, I mean, where does Mikel Arteta fall in this right now? Let's say he does not win a cup this year. He goes another year without winning a trophy, and it's Liverpool and Slot in his first year who comes in and wins the league in the City year. Like, are there questions to be asked of Arteta? Because I think Arsenal fans, you know, we've talked a lot about the style of play this year. Not necessarily it being a negative, but the changes that have been made, I don't think Arsenal fans are too happy about, especially if they're not where they want to be at the very top of the table. Is there a world where Arsenal need to move on from Mikel Arteta to take that next step? Because, let's be honest here, I mean, one FA Cup in a COVID season is all he has to show for. Yes, they got back into the Champions League. Yes, they got close, as they have been for years, to winning a Premier League title, but all for what? And when it comes down to the opportunities you have to take in a season like this, where City have slipped up and Liverpool are in their first year, albeit they've been so impressive. And hey, there's still half a season left. Maybe Liverpool slip up. Maybe the wheels come off after an injury and Arsenal are there to capitalize and all this is a moot point. But as it stands right now, I mean, because I think there are questions to be asked of Arteta. I think one FA Cup in a COVID year and in over five seasons is not good enough with the players there and the money spent and the progress we have seen. You know, we've seen them play amazing stuff. We've seen them be quality in the Champions League and blow teams away, but they're just stalling right now. And if that's the case, do they persevere next year or do they look elsewhere? That's just a point I wanted to ask you, get your take on.
I'd be shocked if they got rid of him. Here's the thing. I think he almost set the bar too high. Because the first two seasons, it was eighth and then eighth. Then they nearly get the Champions League. Then out of nowhere, they're in the title race. And now, that for you know every season since then, you're thinking, okay, this team's got to win the league now. Right? When's it going to happen? And it hasn't happened. And this year has been maybe a step back. So, sure, questions can be asked. I think he's safe. I think this team, as Carragher said on Sky before, too good not to win a trophy. They are. That's a fact. So I think he needs to deliver something. It doesn't have to be the Premier League. I think an FA Cup, Arsenal have a great history in that competition. I think they've won it the most times. I don't care if it's a League Cup at this point. You got to get some sort of momentum, not to keep him in the job, but maybe to get a bit of a feel-good factor back with the fans. You know, okay, we didn't win the league this season, but we've got something to show for it. But I do think he almost maybe is suffering from a little bit of Pep syndrome, overthinking it, being a little too defensive. I think those are fair points. I would love to see them go back to, you know, maybe where they were that first season in the title race, where it was just beautiful stuff and they didn't have maybe the finisher up front. And maybe that's something they finally bring in. To get them over the line, but at least they were, you know, a joy to watch and playing some of the best football in the league. They're not that team anymore. And I think if you're not that team and you're third, it's one thing. If you get over the line Mourinho style, it's another thing. And I've said before, I don't think they're quite that. Because we've seen some weeks they blow teams away, they put five past them. Other weeks it's a grindy 1-0 against Ipswich. And this season, that isn't going to get you the league, unfortunately. Liverpool are too good. So if it was just them and Chelsea, I'd say, yeah, maybe they've got a chance. But just looking at the way Liverpool are playing, it's not going to get the job done. So I think Arteta's got to have a bit of a think. He's got to get some more attacking production out of this team, especially without Saka. Does he get a bit of help in January? Maybe. But I think probably next summer is the window where Arsenal are like, all right, listen, we can do one side of the game very well. We're a little bit more inconsistent at the top end of the pitch. We need somebody else in that front three who's gonna help us win the league, because I think Liverpool have a better attack. You could argue Chelsea do. City at their best have shown with Haaland they can beat anybody in terms of the best front three in the league. So I think Arsenal need another player in that front line. I really do. I think I like Havertz to an extent. I'm looking at the left side with Martinelli. I'm not sure he is the long-term elite title-winning left winger. I think he can play a role in this squad for sure. And when Trossard's stepped in, it, you know, I think he's more of just a bench guy, to be honest. So I think there's more pieces to add to the puzzle with Arsenal, which is where I come back to, okay, Arteta, maybe he's not, maybe this team isn't the finished article quite yet. Maybe there's one more piece that he needs. Because I think they are behind Liverpool in terms of the attack. But yeah, no, it's frustrating. It's frustrating. I think criticism is valid. I really do. I think he's been just a little bit up and down. I'm not sure his ideas have always worked. So therefore, yeah, I mean, he deserves criticisms. But I wouldn't be looking at sacking him anytime soon.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And it's more of just a thought experiment to kind of analyze where they've been the last few years. But let's talk about their London rivals in Chelsea, who, like we've said, have, I think, exceeded expectations this year. Enzo Maresca definitely has. I think these players, we've kind of always thought there's potential there. When that potential was going to be realized, we had no idea, just because of the amount of money spent and the turmoil that the club had gone through. But here they are. They had a bit of a slip up at home against their West London rivals, Fulham, this past weekend. And my question to you is, and I want to get your take on, you know, what do you make of Maresca coming out in press conferences and pretty much downplaying them being in a title race? And now I kind of agree with him. I think he's being truthful. But from a psychological perspective, like, you're Chelsea. You go out to win everything. Like, that's implying that you don't think this team is up there with the very best in the league. So when you go out and say those things, my head just goes, well, what is that doing to the psyche of the players? Now, clearly, I mean, I don't think it's that detrimental because they seem to be a pretty unified squad, which we have not been able to say about Chelsea in recent years. But, I mean, do you think, A, do you agree with him? Do you think they are or are not title contenders? And what do you make of him coming out and saying that they are not?
I agree with him. I think it's, I don't want to say it's strange, but it's strange because they're second in the league, you know what I mean? Or they were, I guess, up until this weekend. I like Maresca. I think you're onto something. He speaks truthfully. He's gotten them playing some great football. He's finally gotten a bit of a feel-good factor back. I mean, you've heard Chelsea fans singing, "We've got our Chelsea back." The fans are on board. It always felt a little too good to be true for them this season, and I think that Fulham result, the draw at Everton, gave us a better indication of where they're at. So yeah, he is right. But should he have said it? Maybe this is a group of players that likes being the underdog. Maybe this is the role for Chelsea. No, we're not. You know, that maybe they like being sort of the chasing pack, the underdog. Nobody expects them. He's taking the pressure off the players. You could argue with that, saying I don't want to put any pressure on them to, you know, have to go and win the league. You're onto something though, because it is Chelsea. Not that they expect to win the league every season, but, you know, their Premier League record is strong, you know what I mean? And when they're in title races, you expect them to go for it. I think we have to take a step back and say this is a new Chelsea. This isn't the Mourinho, Conte, bring in a Galactico manager, we'll win the league, we'll be shit the next season, you know what I mean? It's not, it's sort of a different era, so I'm looking at them a bit differently. So I don't actually mind it, to be honest, and I think it's fair because this is a new team, this is a young team, perhaps a team that's still a little bit naive, and still has a little bit of a ways to go. As we saw the last 2 weeks, the results weren't really there. So to keep the form they were going in for 38 games would have been extremely difficult for them. So I think they're doing really well. I don't see them winning it. 10 points for them, you know, it's a relatively inexperienced group. It's just too big a gap. So they don't quite scare me as much as Liverpool in attack. And at the back, there's still a concern over the keeper. And they don't really have a Van Dijk or a Saliba back there. So I'd love to see them hanging around. I don't think they can win it, though. I think top four is theirs to lose. They're more than good enough for that. Go and get the Conference League. You know, they're walking through that, win that, get top four. That's a good season for Chelsea.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I want to go back to a point you set up about Arteta, like in his first few years at Arsenal, about setting the bar so high. I think that part of that is kind of what Maresca's doing. I think it's kind of like, hey, we need to take our time here. It should be a process. We shouldn't be expected to shoot up the table in one go. And I think Chelsea fans are okay with that. And that's why when I say it's Chelsea, I think there's a caveat to that. And I think they're aware that they're not, like you said, the Chelsea they once were. And I mean, God, they've had to, they've had to endure, I mean, some relative to them crap the past couple of years, after Tuchel sacking and Potter and Pochettino and whatnot. So I think they're okay with finally seeing some consistency, some positivity. And like you said, you know, the fans, you know, we've got our Chelsea back finally buying in, because for a long time it felt like there was such a disconnect there. And I want to quickly talk about Fulham, who Chelsea lost to. I mean, Marco Silva is a guy who's been around the league for a while. He was at your boys with Everton, never really clicked there. But he's got this Fulham team playing great stuff. They've got some quality players, but nothing crazy. I think this is really a case of Marco Silva doing a phenomenal job. I think he's going to be a hotly tipped manager come the end of the season, whether he stays at Fulham. He's had a great couple years now. Not even with their fit, just the football they play, I think, is really good. And if he was at a team with some better players, and I'm thinking to either of our clubs, you know, maybe you guys in a couple of years with some investment, but the players we have at West Ham's disposal, I think, are cut above Fulham. I think we're just being brutally, terribly managed right now. I think that could be an opportunity for Fulham, but for Marco Silva, rather. But what have you made from these West London boys? They picked up a signature win, first win at the Bridge in years. I mean, what is the ceiling for them? Could they get a Conference League or Europa League spot? It's not out of the realms of possibility, given Fulham's history.
Yeah, why not? I mean, only only one loss in their last 11 matches. So, I mean, the thing that's impressed me with Fulham is their consistency. I mean, they score a goal pretty much every game. They're tough to keep out. They're seventh in the league for points away from home, and they're eighth for points at home. So they can compete with just about everybody. They're strong away from home. They're strong at home. They're comfortable going at teams, and they're comfortable without the ball. And I think Fulham have just been a great watch this season. They've got good players from front to back, but they're very well cooked, as you alluded to. They sit eighth at the time of recording. I don't quite see them pipping Newcastle or Aston Villa to a European spot, but listen, Villa have been up and down. You know, the little bit of Champions League hangover maybe could hurt them and open the door for a Fulham who only have Premier League football to play. They're in the hunt. They're certainly in the hunt. And that's a great season for Fulham. I mean, listen, they deserve it. Like you said, they play good stuff. They're comfortable soaking up pressure. They're comfortable going at teams. They're really, really well-rounded, and I think you have to credit Silva for that. Their signings have been savvy. Iwobi's been great. Smith Rowe, although he's injured, a good addition. They've got all these attacking players who just get you production. I mean, they've been really, really savvy. So, fair play to them. Big win at the Bridge. We were there last season. They were desperate to win that game. Fulham, they're always desperate to beat Chelsea. They're like their little, you know, their little neighbors next door. So yeah, listen, I think seventh would be sensational for them. I just find it tough to see how they get over Newcastle, especially the way they're playing, the firepower they have with Isak and Gordon, but you never know.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think it'd be a lot to leap Villa and Newcastle, just because Villa and Newcastle have made transitions from that mid-table team to hovering around those European spots. Fulham are in the middle of that, I think. That's where they can hope to be come the end of a transition, whereas right now I think it's a bit too early. All right, I want to wrap things up with a team who's probably the complete opposite of Fulham right now, just brutally underperforming. Manchester United, things have gotten pretty messy over these last couple weeks. Ruben Amorim has come in, and for better or worse, he has said we're going to play a certain way. He demands certain things of training. You're seeing Garnacho and Rashford being left out of teams. Marcus Rashford pretty much said he wants to leave. He could leave in January. He's just not in the squad right now, even after a couple okay performances. But United, I mean, they're genuinely an awful team, and there are players here who we would say are not genuinely awful players. And it's a problem Manchester United have been having for years. And it's this mishmash of guys who maybe think they're too good to put in the hard yards. Amorim has questioned, you know, guys' willingness to put in the hard yards and even just run. They've got fitness issues. I mean, you got Mason Mount. I mean, you can go on and on and on about the issues plaguing Manchester United right now. But I think what I want to talk about is how do they fix it? Because you know, with the money they've spent on players, they still owe money on these giant transfer fees they paid for guys like Antony and Hoyland and all these guys, and they're all brutally underperforming, and you have a manager who wanted to come at the end of the season. They made him come now because they want an uptick in form, presumably. If I was them, I mean, you just punt the season, but Amorim and fans want to blow this team up, not literally, but they want to ship out the deadwood, bring in their own players, play with a vision and an identity, which is all the things Ralf Rangnick was saying 3 years ago. I mean, this is what we were saying, you know, coming into the Ten Hag era, and they didn't really solve it. Or they tried to. They tried to back Ten Hag. They tried to get rid of some of the deadwood players, and then it didn't work out. And Ten Hag was found out as not really being good enough to get these players to play a style of football that was capable of competing at the top of the Premier League nowadays. And what do you have? You have a new manager in with a new philosophy who's going to want new players probably, because who can these players play the way Ruben Amorim wants? I'm not convinced. I don't see a solution that is happening anytime soon. And I think all this reeks of is a long-term rebuild where United fans are going to have to endure more crap. But I think from their perspective, they'll be saying, hey, we've been enduring crap since Fergie left. And so I think it all comes back to the Glazers and poor ownership, malpractice of ownership, to be quite honest, in the transfer market, and the stadiums falling down or cutting money to ex-players. I mean, there's all sorts going on. What do you see for the future of Manchester United in the short term this season and also in the long term and how they fix it?
I mean, they'd be lucky to get top half at this point. I mean, we knew it would take time. I did, at least. I never expected Amorim to change things overnight. I like how he speaks. I like the way he wants to play football. The positive news is that I don't see it getting much worse for them. But here's my problem with Man United. I mean, people act like, and their fans act like, they've been throwing out the same players since Ferguson left. And it's the same crap lineup every week. We've been seeing it for years. This is almost a brand new team. I mean, what more do they want other than, okay, a left wing back they need. And adding a left-footed player at that position should help, I think. But people are acting like this squad needs surgery again. Look what they did in the summer and the summer before that. I mean, who's been playing this season? Onana, 2023. The summer 2023, they signed him. Yoro, just signed him. Martinez, 2022. De Ligt, 2024. Mazraoui, 2024. Ugarte, they just got. Mainu broke through last season. Diallo's new this season. Hoyland was 2023. Xerxes was this summer. Garnacho broke through last season. I mean, who do you want out, right? If they act like there's all these cancers in the locker room. Okay, Rashford's going, fine. Bruno's your best player. Shaw never plays. Dalot was your best player last season. Maguire can go. Okay, that's fine. So who's the problem? They act like they need to spend a boatload of money on a new team. You already have. Like, I mean, off the bench, you could be better. Okay, instead of bringing on Antony, you could see an upgrade there. Fine. I think Eriksen's been okay. Casemiro can go. So besides maybe Casemiro, Antony, maybe Maguire, who needs to go? What am I missing here? Where do they need to upgrade the lineup besides left wing back? I mean, all of these guys have been bought in the last two, maybe three summers. I don't understand. And they act like, I think they're all decent. I think Mazraoui's been good. Garnacho's obviously a talent. Diallo's a talent. I like Hoyland. Xerxes, I've never been sure about. But the point is, they've bought a new team. So, listen, Amorim, I'm not expecting him to click overnight. He brought him in mid-season. But this is what he's going to have to work with, I think. It doesn't seem like they've got boatloads to spend. Like you said, they still owe teams money. So, you know, maybe you add a left back in January. But other than that, this is it. This is the team. So somebody's got to get these guys playing. Because I think there are good players in there. I really do. I think, listen... Like I said, the bench isn't great, but on paper, they should not be 14th. And listen, I think Ten Hag deserved to go. He wasn't getting it done. But listen, Amorim, he's got a big job on his hands, and I don't think throwing money at it is necessarily the solution. And it could just dig them into a bigger hole because you're going to have more deadwood to ship out. So I just don't see where they need upgrades if these guys are all supposed to be good. I don't really see it, other than a few guys on the bench. Maybe Johnny Evans and Maguire. What am I missing here? Like, where in the starting 11 needs to upgrade to get them into the top four. Like, this is a brand new team. Like, you right. know what I mean? I don't know. Am I crazy?
Yeah. No, I don't think you are. And I think another thing I didn't really touch on was Dan Ashworth leaving. He spent more time on gardening leave waiting to start at United than actually time spent at United. Massive question marks are there with Ineos and Ratcliffe. I mean, given their time at Nice, not really filling United fans with optimism. I think United fans have almost been, you know, like tricked in their brain. It's almost like PTSD from having to say, oh, we need to get these players out these last few years. They just keep spewing it, and they don't even realize what's transpired in the market. And like you said, the 11 they're putting out week in, week out. And I like you said, it's I don't know where they go. I think the players there have to improve. They have to step up their game. And they are players who were not signed for 5, 10. These are 50, 40, 60 millions of pounds of players spent. You have to do the business. I mean, I'm thinking of just Roy Keane. Like, you have to do your job. You have to play better. And sometimes it's as simple as that. They're underperforming for whatever reason, and it's up to Amorim to motivate them, to get the tactics right, to get the best out of them. But, you know, there are teams and there are coaches who I've looked at in the past who have genuinely improved players they've worked with. There has not been one player. It's a Man United problem where they get to Man United and it's like, okay, I've kind of made it. It's United. It's the biggest club in England. And they kind of stop elevating their game. Even look at Rashford when he had that rapid rise and he's just stagnant. He had a good season and a bad season and they're not able to keep it up. And even Mainu, I mean, he's so young and he had such a brilliant debut year last year. He struggled a bit this year. You have to make sure guys like that continue to improve. And when you go out and buy, you know, 40 million on Lenny Euro, who's still young, you develop him and you make him better. Because go look at Arsenal when they bought Saliba for 30 million. They loaned him back to Saint Etienne for a year and he came back, had a solid campaign. But look at him now. He was not that player when he got to Arsenal. So United have to be able, and Amorim have to be able, to coach these players and develop them to a certain extent, because you're not going to just buy the 11 pre-made and go win the league. You're not going to do it. I mean, look at Liverpool right now. When they bought Mo Salah for 30 million, did anybody think he was going to be the player he was? No. Look at Van Dijk. I mean, we thought he would be good. It was a lot of money. We didn't even think he was worth 70 million when they bought him. Look at him now. Look at Arsenal and Saka. They've developed him. Odegaard was not, you know, this proven quality. He was kind of a failed wonder kid. And look at him now. Arteta has been able to get the best out of him. Look at with Gabriel, same thing. So United have to be able to do that for me. And they have not done that at all in recent years. That's where I think the solution is. So it's a really interesting predicament. All right. That's going to wrap things up for this episode. We'll have another brief hiatus over these festive games. They're starting to slow down a bit after Boxing Day. But we'll see. Next time we talk, hopefully we'll have a team close to Liverpool maybe to talk about. We'll see where United end up, see where our boys West Ham and Everton are.
Relegation battle's tight.
It is. The three promoted teams, as always, scrap it away down there. Wolves under Vitor Pereira look like a whole new team. Could they, you know, be out of it? We'll find out. But until next time, thank you for listening.